Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, pants it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Yes, let's get it started. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Celtics postgame show here on CLNS Radio. I am your host, Matt Rury, and as always, we are brought to you by Lynda.com. That's LYNDA.com. I'll tell you a little bit about a free 10-day trial that you can get later in the show just by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. Our other wonderful partner is Peak Organic Brewing Company, and I am actually holding a Peak Organic IPA in my hand right now. And Mr. Mike Munger, my co-host, I'm going to probably need a few of these after that pitiful overtime that the Celtics just displayed for us against the Pistons at the TD Garden.
Yeah, that's one of those games where it makes me wish I would start drinking again. it was an awful end of the fourth quarter and overtime, and you try to take the positives from this, but this one's going to hurt. If the Celtics end up missing out in the playoffs by a game, they can look back at this one and say, if we would have beaten this scrub Detroit team who had no right whatsoever even being in the game with the Celtics, even without Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas out there, then they'll know what happened. It was just poor execution, poor defensive rotations. I don't know what would make anybody on the Celtics think that you would need to help off of a wide open shooter to help Avery Bradley play defense.
Yeah, exactly. There were a couple of really bad plays in the overtime. The Celtics in Boston tonight, coming back from a quick two-game road trip over in Oklahoma City and San Antonio, had a game that they, frankly, like you said, should have won against this scrub Detroit team. They needed to win this game. There are a lot of important games coming up against teams that are better than this Detroit team. They needed to take this one down, and they just couldn't do it as they fall in overtime, 105-97 to the Detroit Pistons. So, again, the Celtics are now tied for eighth place with Indiana. You mentioned Smart and Thomas being out, Marcus Smart. Let's get this out of the way right now. Let's just get you on record for whether you thought that was a dirty play or not the other night.
Well, it was definitely a stupid play. I didn't get to see it live, so I saw an update on my phone. And when I finally went home and saw it, I'm watching, I heard his explanation. It was stupid. It was. He hauled off, and he pretty much just kind of gave Matt Bonner a big swift punch in the nuts. So, he's a rookie, so you appreciate the fact that he's not backing down, but there's a right way to do it in this day and age, and there's a wrong way to do it. This isn't the NBA that I grew up with, that I miss, and then that got me into basketball. This is the new soft NBA where something like that is considered a flagrant foul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last flagrant foul that he got called for, where he went to the basket and there was, elbow contact to the face, I think it was of Elfrid Payton in Orlando, that wasn't a flagrant, that was a stupid call. This was a stupid play on his part, and potentially ended up costing his team a game tonight. So hopefully he uses it to learn from. doesn't do it again. Any flagrant from here and out, I believe, gets him a suspension.
That's right. He's one point. He's 1 point away. 5 points gets you an automatic one-game suspension. He has 4 points at this point. So even a flagrant one would get him at that one-game suspension. He's got to be careful.
Yeah, and with the way they call, a lot of stuff flagrants in the NBA these days, you got to shake.
You never know.
You just hope the kid learns from it. You don't know what's going to happen from here on out, and I think tomorrow night we're going to see Marcus Smart come out and play like a man possessed.
Yeah, he's got to be focused, right?
I think he knows that he can't be stupid. He has to just go out there and play hard. Don't lose his aggressiveness. Don't lose that pit bull mentality. However, just play smart. The Nets are another team that we shouldn't lose to. They're not good.
Exactly. They've fallen off the map, and I'm loving that because of the draft pick implications that the Celtics have because of Brooklyn's poor record. You can hit us up on Twitter at CLNS Radio. Warren Shaw is tweeting for us tonight. You can hit him up at Shaw Sports NBA. Mike is on Twitter at SexyScottish34, and I am at Team Green Truth. Of course, CLNS Radio is on Facebook as well. So head on over to clnsradio.com/Facebook to get to our page. So, Mike, we're talking about Marcus Smart here, and you can give us a call at 347-215-7771 if you want to get in on this action. How quickly, I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's in the past. It happened. But how much did his absence impact the Celtics as far as having maybe fresh legs in overtime? I'm not really sure what happened for them to fall apart so much in OT, and we can get into that as well. But how much do you think Smart's absence was a factor in that?
Well, I think he would have done a good job playing against KCP. I mean, Caldwell Pope had 27 points tonight. This is a guy who, when he was coming out of college, I believe he went to Georgia. He was known as a pretty good outside shooter, but he hasn't hit that stage in his career yet where he's the guy that you're saying, oh, look at this up-and-coming shooting guard. Here's the guy that's going to be the next star shooting guard in the NBA. He just hasn't hit that yet. But I think Marcus Smart would have been the kind of guy to help on him tonight. I don't think that he would have made the mistakes on defense that a couple of the other guys have. When you look at how the game played out, with Reggie Jackson being their star player and probably their primary go-to guy, he was shut down the majority of the game. I thought that whoever guarded him, whether it was Bradley or even Pressey at times or Crowder, whoever was guarding Reggie Jackson actually shut him down. A lot of the times what happened was he would drive to the lane, he would have no pass to the basket, and then he would have to kick it out. But the problem is if you kick it out to a wide-open shooter, there's a good chance that they're going to score, and then you let somebody like Caldwell Pope get in the rhythm. Tayshaun Prince was left alone wide open in the corner for some reason.
They forced Jackson to pass so much, and that's, I think, a great strategy is to force him to pass. He's trying to get to the rim just about every time. So they did a pretty good job defending him, like you said, but that Caldwell Pope play in overtime to sort of push things to like 9 or 10 points, that was the dagger, and it was the reason, and overall it's just a small portion of the times that they did that in this game where they just left the guy wide open. I don't understand why they were collapsing so much to the lane. You don't need to triple team Reggie Jackson.
No, not at all. I mean, looking at the stats right now, even in overtime, the Celtics had 105 shot attempts. 105 shot attempts in this game against Detroit, even in overtime. If they would have just shot 40%, they probably win this game. Because I don't even think Detroit played all that well. I just think they played good for about a 6-8 minute stretch in the fourth quarter in overtime, and that was good enough, where I think the Celtics were clearly the better team, but they got lazy, they got complacent, and I don't know. It's a tough pill to swallow. I mean, there were some guys that came out there. I thought Jay Crowder played a pretty good game overall, even though I could be mistaken, but I believe it was actually his assignment on Caldwell Pope.
It was.
I think he was the one that was cheating off.
Yeah, he did collapse a little too much. Yeah, but you're right. He did play a great game, and I've been often critical of him shooting the ball. I still cringed when he shot 5 3 pointers. He was only 1 for 5 tonight. It's still relatively ugly. Jackie McMullen on the Comcast broadcast tonight was very kind when she said that his shot needs to be more consistent. I think that was far too kind. I will say that he's still not a good shooter. I don't want him shooting the ball. He can do everything else on the floor that he wants. He can dive for loose balls. He can grab rebounds, which he did tonight. He can pass the ball. He's a good passer. I like his defense and his energy. I want him on the floor, but he still is a liability. I'd rather have Brandon Bass shooting three-pointers than Jay Crowder at this point. So some of those shots are really ugly, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when you look at Jay Crowder, style and the way he plays, it's very reminiscent to me, in my opinion. Maybe you disagree, maybe you agree. There's something Posey-esque about the way Jay Crowder plays. He's tough, he's physical. He's a defender. Not quite as long as Posey was, where I don't think he's going to be able to guard the 1 through the 4 position. You know, maybe the small fives if another team plays small ball. But there's something Posey-esque about the way he plays where, you know, if he's knocking down the spot up three or getting to the basket or doing all like the garbage things, you know, taking a hard foul every now and then, that's the kind of player I envision Jay Crowder being. And he's one of those guys where if they keep him and they keep him around when they finally are able to put some contending level talent out there, I'd like to have him on this team. I'd like to see him come off the bench and be that sixth man, that first small forward wing off the bench. There's just something Posey-esque about him, in my opinion. But you're right.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be shooting 16 shots a game. That's where the problem lies. If he can knock that down to, you know, between 8 and 10 shots a game, wide open threes. I don't care if he shoots all threes if he's not getting the basket. If he's wide open, you know, I'll accept
it. I mean, somebody's got to shoot it.
Yeah, any wide open shot is a good shot.
So that's a part of the thing is that it's Brad Stevens' system that sort of allows everybody to shoot. You saw Tyler Zeller in the first half of this game shooting just inside the 3-point line, and he knocked one, maybe two down. So everybody on the Celtics is basically allowed to shoot if they're open and in the scheme of the offense. And that's why I think Jay Crowder jacks it up so much. But I would still like him to get his shot a little bit better before he continues being a scoring option for this team. So I don't know. I feel like as far as the Marcus Smart thing is concerned, just to put a wrap on that one, I think you're right that he could have had a pretty decent impact in this game defensively. So maybe the Celtics and coaching staff sort of uses that to motivate him in the future to say, listen, you got to be more of a clean player and still be as intense as you are on the floor, because that's one of the qualities that really makes him a good player. All right, Mike, we're going to go to
and
the
also,
call lines, actually.
Lastly, real fast before you do that, lastly, more Marcus Smart would have meant a lot less Phil Pressey. And again, you never want to badmouth somebody who goes out there and plays with energy. I thought defensively he did a pretty decent job, but Phil Pressey should never shoot the ball, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In college you could probably get away with it.
He's another one of those guys.
Seeing Phil Pressey out there when Detroit kind of got into a rhythm in that third and fourth quarter, I thought that was a big reason as to why we kind of got stagnant here. And him, you know, he made the one jump shot fine, but then he kind of started – it just almost looks like he doesn't realize he can't shoot the ball that well. So I think if we would have had Marcus Smart, the difference between Marcus Smart and Phil Pressey is easily the difference between the win and the loss, in my opinion.
Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. So, I mean, Pressey's one of those guys that he gets a shot in the flow of the offense. You kind of don't mind it. But when he's taking shots early in the shot clock because he got into the lane a little bit, I don't know if I really like those floaters that we saw tonight. All right. We admittedly haven't had many callers. If you listen to the post-game show, most of you are just fine listeners of the program. You haven't called in. And that's fine. We know the Celtics have struggled throughout the year. It might be tough to want to get your thoughts out, but I recognize this phone number, and I'm just going to go to him because I trust what he has to say. Caller, I'm not even going to name you because I'll probably get it wrong, but I'm pretty sure I know who this is. The 716 area code. What's
going
on?
Coach Rich.
What's up, Coach Rich? That's what I thought. I haven't heard from you in a while, and I just wasn't sure about the rest of the number. But it's good to hear you. I'm glad you're calling in. Did you see this game tonight? What do you think about everything we've discussed so far?
Well, you know what? I saw the overtime because, you know, I don't get the feeds down here, so I got the Comcast overtime.
It's gross.
And watching, I get to see the gross part, but I watched on Twitter feed. And I haven't been calling in because this has been a big recruiting year for me, and I've been on the road like every night, five nights
Fair
a week
enough.
Recruiting. So I've been keeping track of the Celtics. I've, you know, even on the road, I watch the Twitter feeds, and I'm going to go to the whole body work. I'm very happy where their progress is. You know, tonight you're playing without some key component pieces. I mean, you're talking about Pressey. He shouldn't be shooting in the paint because he can't see over. He's having a tough time seeing the rim, and his percentage is going to go down. Yeah, he can knock down open shots, but, you know, he's having a tough time seeing the rim, and he's got to know better than that. And you know, I think to a man, they probably all felt like somebody had to step up without Isaiah and, you know, obviously Marcus Smart. So it's tough when you're losing key pieces like that. And you know, I got to see the overtime, which they look like just, you know, they kept sitting on Comcast. They look like they're running in mud. And I think that was even a little bit of I think that was a compliment because they would look worse than that.
It got to the point, and Munger, I don't know if you want to speak to this as well, but it got to the point where Abby Chin reported from the huddle on Comcast, Rich, that Brad Stevens was asking the guys to have better body language. So, Munger, at that point, if the coach is asking for better body language, I mean, these guys probably were just gassed from having played a tough and gritty 40 to 44 minutes. And then by the end, when they had sort of let things go and overtime and the last play going into overtime didn't work out, it seems as though they were defeated. And I think Brad Stevens knew that. Maybe we can find out from Jared Weiss in a bit. But what do you think, Mike?
I mean, you'd like to think that wasn't the case, but I mean, I think you might be right. I mean, let's face it. You know, these guys aren't robots. You know, they're not Superman, they're athletes and they're human. So, you know, even in an 82-game season, the best of the best get mentally drained. I mean, it's very, again, I refer back to the old days. You're not going to see guys that are going to go out there every single game and try and, you know, run a hole or, you know, run through a wall 48 minutes a game. You're not going to see guys that are willing to, you know, punch somebody or take a punch for their team to win a game. These guys, sometimes they just don't have it, and it was tonight. I mean, a guy in particular that I defend and I love more than anybody on this team, Avery Bradley, offensively he just didn't have it. You know, he made a couple wide open threes, but he didn't have a particularly good offensive night. Defensively, I thought he played phenomenal. I really thought he was key in shutting down Reggie Jackson, not letting him take over the game. Pretty much any time Avery Bradley was near him, Reggie Jackson was absolutely useless. However, I'd like to see more from him. He had a couple late turnovers. I think it was in the overtime where I was trying to pick and roll, and he tried to throw a pass about 20 feet to Jarebko or Bass. It just, that's not his game. I just thought that could kind of be attributed to possibly the mental fatigue, just not being aware of your surroundings. So, I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying. We'd like to think it wasn't the case, but on a team like this where you don't have go-to guys and star players and everybody has to pretty much play perfect every night or as close to perfect as they can every single night for them to get a win, I could see them being a little fatigued and let down after a pretty poor final shot attempt at the end of regulation.
All right, Coach Rich, we haven't heard from you in a while. I said that off the top, so I'll let you get a final word in for sure, but I do want to ask you this. As far as Marcus Smart is concerned, obviously without any specifics, have you gotten into any situations where you've had to pull one of your players aside after a little bit of an altercation? And put yourself in Brad Stevens' shoes right now. How do you, obviously you don't coach at the NBA level, but how do you think that he might handle this one with Marcus Smart?
Yeah, we've had that situation before, and it's, you know, it's just, you just gotta just appeal to their sense of just, you know, you hurt the team more than anything. It's selfishness, and you gotta tell them it's selfish because, you know, you're better than that, A, and, you know, you let the team down. You know, in this case, he's out in a crucial situation, and he'll grow from that. I mean, that's, I think he will. And I love his compete level. You know, we got a kid on our team like that, too. And, You know, we have to tell her, look, we love you competing like that, but just be smart. Don't be selfish because you don't want to, you know, impact the team and cost us a game that, you know, we might need for a playoff push. So, you know, I love what Brad Stevens has done. I'm, you know, I've been his biggest supporter since they hired him, and he'll handle that just like he handles everything else. And I think Marcus would be better for it moving forward. And dumb move, obviously. But, you know, he plays with that edge, and, you know, you don't want to take that edge away from him. You just got to be smart. That's all. So,
all right, Rich. Well, thank you for calling. And I take it you like the direction the team is going in?
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. I love watching. They're fun to watch. They play hard. They compete. You know, they make mistakes, yes, but, you know, they got people playing out of positions until they get all the pieces that they want in place. You know, you're going to see people maybe, you know, like you're talking about that over time, trying to do them some things that maybe that they shouldn't do or aren't capable of doing. But I do. I like the direction. And I like them a lot more than I like the Bruins right now, to be honest. So.
That's a good point. But I mean, I can't really speak to the Bruins because I'm not much of a hockey person myself. So, all right, Rich, we appreciate the call as always, sir. Thank you for listening and following me on Twitter, because that's obviously how you realized we were on the show tonight. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next time.
Boys.
There he goes. Coach Rich Munger. And he mentioned that the Celtics are, he likes the direction of the team. And I think you can attribute a lot of that to Coach Stevens and how he's really brought things along. I'm hoping that Jared Weiss, who I dropped his name in the course of that call, doing the locker room report and calling us in a little bit, is going to have some information on that final play of regulation, because I don't know, Munger, as good of a game as Evan Turner was having, and he was pretty solid tonight. I want to focus on some positive things going forward in the show, because there were definitely some players on the Celtics that deserve some praise in this game. But I want to first focus on a little bit of a negative. Evan Turner, at the end of regulation, sort of fumbled the ball on the final play call, and it appeared to be some sort of an isolation. So I'm hoping that Jared gets Brad Stevens, or that he heard from somebody who spoke to Brad Stevens about what that final play call was about, because if they called an isolation for Evan Turner, that is the last play call that I would ever want to see at the end of a game.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, when Paul Pierce was here and you had the Paul Pierce ISO play, you know, even later on in his career when he didn't have quite the burst or the explosion, you know, the best of us were happy with it because that's your go-to guy and you knew that was Paul Pierce. It just, you know, when you see Evan Turner in an ISO situation against the guard on the other team, I'm not happy with it. I think you have to go high pick and roll there. Honestly, I don't want him shooting the ball all that much anyway, but I definitely don't want the, I mean,
he's got, so he had a decent mid-range game, and he is that mid-range player. And so part of the problem here is that his confidence is so high, and normally you would say that's a good thing. But I think his confidence is almost to a fault at times, because he takes shots that he thinks he can make, and they're just not good shots, and it hurts the team.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the smartest idea to have him doing that. Again, I think if you run a high pick and roll and then you get switched against the big from the other team, maybe it's a better chance of going ISO, because then you could probably get by the guy going to the rim or get the guy backpedaling a little bit. You know, or either you hit the guy rolling the basket, or when the guy rolls, somebody slides over for an open shot, you know, you let Turner pass the ball instead. You know, again, I'll finally give the guy credit. He didn't have the most awful game. He wasn't completely useless on the floor.
Yeah, he cut down on the turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, he only had 2 turnovers tonight, but, you know, when you got, again, I'll give the guy credit. If you're an athlete, You want the ball in your hands at the end of the game. If you have that competitive drive, that's
what
you
want.
Yeah. It's fine. However, you have to realize your limitations. And for him to do it like that, just straight isolation, maybe that was a play call. We have to jump on Brad a little bit, but I didn't agree with it. I thought that that's one of those ones where even if he would have pulled it back between his legs and done a step back, I think it would have been a better shot. And just trying to go right into traffic and pulling up, because at first it looked like he got blocked, but then when you see it,
right,
he just lost the ball. I mean, I think that maybe he would have gone a different route, maybe try to go behind the back, done what he did maybe against Atlanta, where you know, you get to the middle of the lane and give yourself more of an angle, maybe a chance at a potential offensive rebound tip in. I think it would have been better. So I definitely wasn't happy with him on that one. But, you know, again, you're right. When that didn't work out, it pretty much just set the tone for your overtime. And
it really did. And he just fumbled it away. And I don't understand him trying to go up against the trees. You've got Andre Drummond, who, by the way, had, according to Sean Grandy on the radio, I was listening to that before the show started, the 30th worst game at the free throw line by anyone in NBA history. Andre Drummond at 2-for-11. Brad Stevens went for the hack of Drummond, although he had 18 points and 22 rebounds. And when you're a guy or the Celtics and your tallest guy and your biggest player is Tyler Zeller, he is completely overmatched by Andre Drummond. You're almost forced to go small. But the point is that Evan Turner should not be trying to drive the basketball and go up against these guys. Even Caldwell Pope is a bigger player than Turner, and he's going right up against him after the switch. So it seemed like a broken play, and they wasted a lot of time at the top. So I'm really curious to see if we can get some information about what Brad Stevens was doing or going for with that play call. Because you like you said, it set the tone, and overtime was just pitiful, as the Celtics lose this one by 8, and Detroit scored. They went on like a 9-0 run after the Celtics scored the first 2 points of overtime. So not a very good showing in overtime, and that leads the Celtics to the loss. But there are a couple other bright spots that we can touch on in just a second. But as I sip on my second Peak Organic Brewing Company IPA. Don't worry, not the second full one. I was drinking this during overtime as well. I'm not chugging these beers on the air tonight, Nick Gelso. It's okay. I do want to remind everybody about Peak, though, because it's delicious. You can find them at facebook.com/peakbrewing. They're also on Twitter at Peak Brewing and on Instagram as well. The same thing, at Peak Brewing. And they are from Portland, Maine. They have some great organic ingredients that go into their beers. And you can also find them at Whole Foods and Trader Joe's in California. So they're up and down the north or the northeast and the entire eastern seaboard. And they go all the way out to our listeners out in California. So check it out at Peak Brewing on Twitter, like I said. And you can go to peakorganicbrewing.com. I believe that's what it is. But more importantly, their Facebook account at facebook.com/peakbrewing. So as we wait here for Jared, I'm not sure when he is going to call. Probably it's usually in about 20 minutes or half an hour. Let's talk about a guy that actually is just, he's really on fire lately, and he's been making the most of his minutes. And he's a player that I think deserves some praise because he's so humble and he just goes out there and does his job. And he's becoming this explosive force that I really hope the Celtics can find a way to keep on a team that ends up winning. And that man, Munger, is Brandon Bass. He is just the ultimate hustle guy. And I just love the way that he's been playing recently. And he's developing a little bit of an outside shot. So he was excellent in this game tonight. And I like what I see from him lately.
Absolutely. It's funny because he was, early in the season, he was kind of the odd man out because we had Sullinger and Kelly Olynyk, and you figure with the two young power forwards that are going to be here, you know, long term, at the beginning of the year, you know, you didn't really know what you're going to get out of him. So, but he's just done his job. He's a consummate professional, even despite the trade rumors where people thought that he was going to be going to a contender, which, you know, again, would have been fine because I think he would have earned it and deserved that respect. With all that that's going on this season, for him to just continue to come out, be a leader, probably not only on the court but off the court, helping these guys as the veteran that he is, I'm very impressed with Brandon Bass. I don't like the fact that he thinks he's a three-point shooter all the time now. I mean, he went 1-for-2 today, which is fine, but again, I'd rather see him attacking the basket. It's funny, they keep mentioning it on the air. Mike Gorman doesn't remember a player off the top of his head that attacks the rim with two hands as much as Brandon Bass.
Oh, it's excellent. I love it.
And powerful and strong. You know, when you see Brandon Bass doing that, get inside, and what that does is it sets him up for the mid-range because he's got a very good jab step into the jump shot. That's the kind of stuff I like seeing out of Brandon Bass. I mean, he only shot 40% tonight, but you would have never known that unless you actually looked at the stats. Probably saw he shot, you know, 50 to 60% tonight. Just saw if he went by memory. I thought
he took a lot of jumpers. He did take a lot of jumpers, and that's not necessarily his game, although I would, like I said earlier, I'd rather have him taking jumpers than some of the other guys on this team. But, yeah, I thought he was excellent tonight. He was a hustle guy. He had 9 rebounds, and it was refreshing to see that he is still developing into a better player and an explosive player, so I hope they keep him around.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those ones where, if, like I said, when the Celtics become a contender, you feel like he's earned the right to try and win a championship. You know, you thought it was going to happen when we had Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce here. He was, a couple minutes away from it in that Miami series. You thought it was going to happen, and he's kind of like that last remaining veteran here. You know, I mean, even though Bradley was here, he was still a younger guy that didn't really have as big of a role as Brandon Bass did. You know, Bass is a kind of like that last remaining veteran link to what we saw just a few years ago. So you'd kind of like to see him stick around. It's probably not going to require a huge contract. I think with Bass, it's going to depend on the other moves that the Celtics make in the offseason, because he is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And I think that with some of the guys that the Celtics could potentially go after, this is what we call a segue in radio, people. I think that Brandon Bass's role moving forward could be a very big one, especially for a team that's trying to be in contention, because if we go out and go after a guy like Greg Monroe or DeAndre Jordan, some legitimate starting center to play alongside Brandon Bass, he could be an extremely valuable guy on that second unit. He could come out there and be the starter. You can have Kelly or Sullinger, whoever is remaining, coming off the bench with the first big. You could do a lot worse than that. And with a guy that's been, could be in Brad's system for a few years, I think that it's not out of the realm of possibility to see Brandon Bass here for at least 2 or 3 more years.
That would be excellent. And I know that Bass has expressed the desire to sign an extension or a multi-year contract in Boston. So that's a good thing as well. If the player wants to be here and it's a good fit for the team, which it appears to be, then hopefully they can agree on a contract and the Celtics won't pull the classic Boston sports move of lowballing Brandon Bass. I hope they give him market value at the very least and what he deserves, because he's certainly worked hard enough in his NBA career to get a fat paycheck, and he deserves to be on a contender too. So hopefully the Celtics are that contender, but if things part, or if they end up parting ways at some point, I will certainly be a Brandon Bass supporter for the rest of his career. He's just a consummate professional, and he's been an excellent Celtic. So definitely a better swap for, or better than Glenn Big Baby Davis, which is what the Celtics swapped him for. So I'll take that trade any day.
So let me ask you, because I brought up DeAndre Jordan, after seeing what Andre Drummond did against us tonight. Now, again, he's still a young player. He's very athletic. He's absolutely enormous. He's just a massive guy.
What a beast, right?
Witnessed by the time when Tyler Zeller just tried to wrap him up, and he still just kind of shrugged him off and dunked on him. A guy like that, who is very limited offensively to anything around the basket, he's pretty much useless, outside of 5 feet, can't shoot free throws, but is an absolute defensive monster, a beast on the boards. You know, could get you anywhere between 10 and 14 points a night. When you see what Drummond can do against this Celtics team, and you see the effect that guys like that have in this league nowadays, I mean, those are legitimate centers that are defensive-minded, athletic, garbage guys. Would you be inclined to go after DeAndre Jordan hard in this offseason, to the point where you're still giving him a potential max deal? Because when you look at the Clippers situation, it doesn't look good for them salary cap wise. They're going to have to worry about Blake Griffin and Chris Paul. And I mean, DeAndre Jordan could essentially be the odd man out. Is that the kind of guy where in the offseason, if we don't get a good draft pick, because we make the playoffs, or we just fall right at the end of that lottery, potentially, you know, taking us out of the sweepstakes to get a Carly Stein or a Carl Anthony Towns or any legitimate bigs, would you be willing to go after a guy like DeAndre Jordan so he can have the same effect for the Celtics like we saw the Drummond have for the Pistons against us tonight?
Holy moly, Mike, I would love something like that, because you know what, this system that they're building here is, they've already got a lot of the pieces that it would work with if they build around the one big center and some athletic power forwards that can shoot the ball and stretch the floor, but also get to the hoop, which you see in, cross your fingers, if Sullinger comes back to form and is mentally in the game. I think that he's still a potential player to be on a contending team, and Brandon Bass, like we just talked about. But they've got the guards that are going to be locked down perimeter defenders in Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley, who can also knock down perimeter shots. So you've got your garbage cleaner, you got your trash man in the big center. If you sign one of these guys or throw big money at or maybe find Cauley Stein in the draft, if you think that he could be that type of player out of Kentucky, I would love that, because it seems as though the system is shaping up to be that, but they just don't have that player right now. Tyler Zeller is a nice offensive center. He's not great on defense. He's overmatched often in the league at his position, but I do like him as a backup center role. So I would love to see Zeller stick around for a little while as well. But you're right, I think it would be excellent if they found a lockdown center finally for the first time in 20 years to play for this team. That would be excellent, especially in this system.
You know, again, I mean, I wasn't trying to go off topic. It's just that if you saw what Drummond did against us tonight.
Oh, it's amazing.
You know,
it's just amazing.
He
completely overmatched every player on the Celtics, and they couldn't throw anybody at him on the boards. Not one person.
I mean, I think having somebody like him defensively next to Sullinger or Kelly Olynyk would work absolute wonders, because then not only does it strengthen your interior defense, but as we saw, the strength of our defense is on the perimeter with Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley out there. Defensively, there's not too many teams that have the strength on the perimeter that we do. However, once the ball gets inside,
very few.
We're toast. I mean, Tyler Zeller is right. Decent enough big man, but he's not the guy that's going to shut anybody down on the inside.
Kelly Olynyk, and you know what? If Drummond tonight, had any sort of offensive moves, he would have scored 35 or 40 tonight.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. So I think if we can get somebody, you know, like a Drummond or DeAndre Jordan type that's just straight defensive-minded, highly athletic, is a pogo stick, block shots, get the ball going so that we can get into transition offensively and really complement the skill sets that the threes and fours we have, you know, do have right now. I just think, why not go for it? I mean, just watching Drummond tonight, this is just sheer raw athleticism and size and power with not really all that much basketball fundamentals. I mean, it's almost like it's Shaq light watching Drummond, where at least Shaq had a little bit of basketball ability when he was at that age. You know, watching Andre Drummond, I mean, you know, it just makes you realize what the Celtics are lacking, because when a guy like that can pretty much do whatever he wants, I mean, 22 rebounds, 8 of them on the offensive glass, that's just phenomenal. It really is. I mean, you know, Kelly Olynyk and Crowder and Zeller, I mean, they did their best, but it's just not enough. And, you know, to see what he did just kind of makes you long for that traditional five man in the middle.
It would be incredible. I would love it. And if they found a guy like that, one of these guys you mentioned, or they could develop one out of college, I think it would be a step in the right direction. And this team would be better off for it. And I think Brad Stevens would love a guy like that. Anyway, I want to remind everybody about lynda.com. It's that time. Lynda.com, lynda.com/CLNS will bring you a free 10-day trial. And there's a lot going on at Lynda. It's for everyone, men, women, children, everyone, older people, anyone that needs to learn something, go to lynda.com today and get your free 10-day trial. You can learn about setting financial goals or finding a work-life balance. You can find new hobbies on Lynda if you're bored and you're tired of listening to us, which I don't know why you would be. If you just need to improve your resume or something like that, I mean, they can help you with that as well. So head on over to lynda.com/CLNS and you'll get a free 10-day trial. There's 4,500 courses, web development, photography, et cetera, et cetera. Check it out, lynda.com/CLNS. And I want to mention, since we were talking about hustle and grit earlier, Mike, a quick honorable mention for Gerald Wallace, because he was a spark in the first half. I like the way Brad Stevens has been using him lately, sparingly, but in situations where the team needs to sort of hold steady and just be consistent. And Gerald Wallace is a guy that dives for loose balls still. And I think that he was the time that he can get on. He realizes his place on this team. And without going too far deep into the roster, I just wanted to give him a little mention on the show tonight. He is another one of those guys who's the consummate professional. And when called upon, he's going to give you something.
Yeah, no, I was very impressed with Wallace tonight. For him to get a lot of DNPs, coaching decisions, and then just come off the bench and give 13 very valuable minutes. I mean, 8 rebounds in 13 minutes, 3 of them offensive, and I think you remember
those were big offensive rebounds.
Those were huge at that time. I mean, it's straight hustle play. Defensively, he's very good. He's a lot stronger than he looks, so he's a guy that's not afraid to guard the guys on the interior. He's got quick hands. He's just a very good player. You know, again, I mean, if you look at some of the guys that we have, some of the veterans that we have, if we had them 5 years ago, oh man, just imagine how, you know, we'd probably have a couple more rings with that you know, Pierce Garnett group. I mean, Jared
that would have been great. He would have been the ultimate six man off the bench there. That would have been incredible.
Yeah, I think that Gerald Wallace is—he deserves a lot of respect. And again, you know, I get the fact that people don't like his contract, but A, we didn't give it to him. B, we had to take that back in the trade. And C, look at how that trade's working out for us now moving forward, and look how that trade's working out for Brooklyn, where I think Thaddeus Young is the only thing they have left from the trade that they did with us.
Pretty
you know,
much.
We still, you know, we're getting valuable veteran leadership out of Wallace. I believe next year is the last year of his deal, so it's an expiring contract. We could use the stretch provision if we wanted to take less of a cap hit. You know, then I mean, we're going to have cap space up the yin yang anyway. I think we can actually use the stretch provision. Stretches $10 million out over a couple more seasons, so it's less of a single season cap hit. I mean, it's the gift that keeps on giving, and I like Gerald Wallace.
It's going to keep on giving for the next few years, Mike, I think. And I like Gerald Wallace, too. I would like them keep him around. But if they can save some money and get a younger player in the system a little better, or even if he doesn't – or even fit the system the same as Gerald Wallace, I would prefer that. But since you mentioned Brooklyn and this downtime that they're sort of in, I usually do this at the end of the show because it's a little preview to the next show and the next game that's going to be coming up here. But we'll do it now. The Celtics are playing in Brooklyn tomorrow night. So they take on the Nets down there, the team that really the Celtics have, if I may say, they have them by the balls for the next couple of years. I feel like this trade looks better and better every day. And you just mentioned it. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And as Brooklyn falls in the standings, the Celtics look a lot better in draft position. And if you trust Danny Ainge in that capacity, then this is going to be a nice couple of years in Celtics.
Yep. And it's funny because just look at what Danny Ainge has done. You know, he could trade away all of the Celtics draft picks in deals to bring in decent superstar caliber guys or those second tier premier players and still have a gold mine with Brooklyn's picks, because quite frankly, I just don't see Brooklyn being a team that's going to be any good. I mean, maybe they meddle around the late playoff chase, but, you know, Brook Lopez, you never know how many games he's going to play.
Always hurt.
Johnson's an aging star. Deron Williams can't stand being there. You don't know what he's going to do.
Yep.
What do they really have going for them down there? They don't have anything left.
Not much. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's great. They just, they're falling apart at the seams. Their owner wants to sell already. I really hope that the Celtics don't do something like they did in overtime tonight against the Pistons and drop this game against Brooklyn, because Brooklyn actually just won yesterday a pretty big game. As far as the Celtics are concerned, they beat Indiana, so that was, they helped us a little bit there. But from here on out, unless Brooklyn is playing a team that is around the Celtics in the playoff race, whether it be Charlotte or Miami or Indiana again, of course we're going to be rooting for them to lose because of the draft pick implications and all of that. We're going to hear from Jared Weiss in about 5 minutes here, so we'll be excited. I'm excited to see what he has to say about the talk in the locker room after this one, because the overtime, as we've said multiple times, was very ugly. So we'll check in with him in just a few minutes. But until then, this Brooklyn thing is it's not looking good for the Nets. And they were considered to be a playoff contender at the beginning of the season. They have since sort of fallen out of the race. I guess they're not totally out of the race, but there are so many other teams involved that I would look at them as to be one of the teams is not really involved in this race. I think Charlotte, Indiana, and the Celtics are all better than Brooklyn, so I sort of push them aside. But this is a big game for the Celtics tomorrow. They need to win this one, especially after losing tonight, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't know. I'm actually sitting here trying to look up the Brooklyn roster for us, just because I know it ties in with the discussion. I'm trying to see if they have anybody that's going to matter for the future. I mean, I think they have a couple younger guys, I want to say they're European guys, actually, that are pretty decent. But I'm just trying to find this roster here. And, the
it's pretty weak. You said it earlier, it's Young.
What's that?
I said you said it earlier. It's Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, but even him, I don't consider him the kind of guy where he's going to lead the Nets into the future. I mean, I don't even think he's all that good, to be honest with you. I mean,
well, that's the problem, is he's probably their best young player, unless you want to look at Mason Plumlee, I guess. What do you think of him, Dookie?
Well, I mean, he went to Buffs University, so you know he's not going to be a very good pro player.
There you go. Where's Mad Dog when you need him?
He's probably still celebrating their win over the Division III school in the first round.
Oh, man, I love it. Where's the old mugger? Let's bring him out. Let's get a little torture chamber going before Jared. You want to rip on anybody, Mike? You got any ref talk you want to throw out there tonight? I thought Bennett Salvatore was actually pretty good. You want to hate on me for that?
No, I mean, I don't really have too much to say about the refs tonight. There was a play where I want to say it was in the fourth quarter. There was really only one that stands out to me. And Reggie Jackson, he made a good crossover, but then Phil Pressey recovered from behind, smacked the ball out of his hands, but the guy 30 feet away with obstructed view called the foul. And it's like, really? You know, this is when it's going to start happening here in the fourth quarter. But I mean, you know, the Celtics were fouling on purpose late, you know, so, I mean, the 30-17 free throw discrepancy, you know, late in the game when you're fouling on purpose, it wasn't really that outlandish. I mean, again, I don't like Bennett Salvatore anyway. I'll never forgive him for that stupid offensive foul he called on Paul Pierce against the Pistons when Pierce got jumped on and he made the three. So instead of a four-point play, he gave the ball to Detroit. But, there's not really much for me to say about that. You know, if I was gonna spew my vitriol anywhere, it'd just be at that stupid shot Evan Turner took. It'd be the fact that, you know what? Here's something I'm gonna talk about. Let's took me a couple seconds to remember it. If Kelly Olynyk does another stupid pump fake on a wide open jump shot, I think he needs
just
to be fined $500.
Just shoot
every
it.
Pump
I like
fake.
This.
Good God, shoot the ball. I don't get it. I just don't get. You're a 7 foot, you know, guy that used to be a guard. He had a growth spurt, so you have a guard's mentality. You have a good shot. Why
I don't know if he lost his confidence.
A wide open shot. Why? I don't get it. Why would you pass open a wide open shot?
So, Mike, so he's been terrible since coming back from that ankle injury, and he has been shooting, or he was shooting in the first few games, but he was 0 for 8. He was 1 for 9. Tonight he was 1 for 9. He's been like 0 for 7 or 2 for 15. He had like a decent 4-for-9 game in there or something like that. Maybe he's just lost confidence and he doesn't want to shoot the ball. And that's a problem, because if you got a guy or if you have a guy on the floor that is not really feeling it, and he doesn't going to be hesitant, and he's going to sort of do things like that pump fake before he shoots it, even though he's wide open, then that's going to cause problems and it's going to cause turnovers. And you saw it tonight that it's a problem. He needs to fix that somehow.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just a lack of confidence or what. I mean, he just shoot the ball. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. I mean, and I'm not saying jack up shot after shot after shot. Don't try and pull yourself and become a Russell Westbrook type player where, you know, you think you're wide open with five guys on you from 50 feet. If you're wide open and there's nobody within 10 feet of you and you have a good enough shot, you know, especially for someone like him who's got a pretty decent-looking stroke and he can knock down that three. I'm sick and tired of the pump fake. It's just there's nothing more frustrating to me for Kelly Olynyk than watching him do that stupid pump fake, allowing the defender to come at him, because what he does is he's not very quick. So what he does is the defender comes at him and he's, you know, brings the pump fake back down, and either it looks like he wants to think about shooting it again, or then he tries to drive by him, and
right.
By then the defense is recovered.
And then
trapped. So
yep, exactly.
Shoot it.
And he's stuck.
Shoot the ball.
I agree, man. I agree. I would love to see him just shoot it. And I think it's maybe coming back from the injury, that's part of the problem, is that he doesn't know, or he doesn't have the confidence to shoot it. And he's been shooting terribly since that injury. So I would guess that has something to do with it. But as a coaching staff, I'm sure that the Celtics are still encouraging him to shoot the ball. I hope his teammates are doing the same, because there was a point where he was a great weapon out on the perimeter. But we'll have to see what's going on. And I hope that he finds that confidence again, if that's part of the problem. All right. I mentioned it earlier a couple times, actually. We are going to hear some information on that end of regulation play, Munger, because Jared Weiss is now calling us from the TD Garden. You can find the Garden Report with Jared and many other special guests on youtube.com/CLNS Radio. So check those out. Those are great. He's going to tell us at the end of his call about the one that's going to happen tonight. But first, Jared, the thing that I've been harping on pretty much for the last hour or so, what happened at the end of regulation? Was that a play call for Evan Turner to be isolated? Because if it was, I might just blow a gasket here.
Oh, get ready to blow it, because that was
oh boy.
So what Steven said was that the play was to they were able to get the pick for Turner to drive down the lane and try to open up some passing opportunities and get himself that shot. Now,
okay.
Evan Turner had gone to the kind of like Kobe Bryant style step back a couple plays before that, where he was kind of coming across the side of the lane, and then he did like a turnaround step back shot, and it almost went down and kind of rattled around. But that's a shot that is in his arsenal, but his inconsistency and his ability to hit that shot is kind of what separates him from the actual good two guards in the league versus him. So that play was designed for him to be able to drive down the right side of the lane, have a chance to pull up a little bit short or even try to get to the rim, but still have passing options. And, you know, Andre Drummond is a decent shot blocker. So naturally, Andre Drummond got in there, clogged up the lane. Reggie Jackson, it looked like you stripped him, although it might have been Turner losing the ball. It's kind of hard to tell. And I actually haven't
had a
replay of it yet.
He did fumble it.
I'll tell you, though, I was sitting behind the hoop directly in line with this driving angle, and I'm not sure how he saw any option but a step back from 10 feet out, because that driving lane was stuffed up. I had the exact angle that Evan had on that play, and Turner should have taken two dribbles in and then pulled back for the shot, because anything close to the rim wasn't going to happen. So he might have been looking initially, thinking, if I go to the rim, I could open up the corner shooter who could swing it, or the corner guy who can swing it to the elbow three for the shot. But he would have, I think that was more risky than the pull-up for the elbow jumper. So he should have done that.
Yeah, you know what? That's exactly what Munger was saying when we were talking about it earlier, is that he, a better option for Turner there was to do that step-back jumper that he usually does. So I would have rather seen that as well. And hopefully now, if I may for just a second, Brad Stevens will realize that he's not in a position to use NBA plays like the isolation. He's playing a college style basketball. It's working. He should stick to it. He doesn't have an isolating player right there or on the roster right now because Isaiah Thomas is not active. So please, Brad Stevens, please, no more isolating Evan Turner. I'm sorry, Jared. Please continue.
Well, once Isaiah becomes active, you won't see ISO to Turner very often. The problem is the other games that they played where they were able to run really great last second timeout plays, they were able to pull a good defender out of the post. With Drummond, you're not going to be able to pull him out. He's going to stay home. So they weren't really able to run those other plays that they've been running. Their shooting was atrocious. They shot, was it 36 or 104 or something like that? It was pretty close to that. I mean, they weren't hitting, their shots weren't falling. So their best call was to try to attack the rim in some sort of way to keep Drummond away from the ball. I'm not sure how a misdirection to Turner is going to be able to do that, as Drummond clearly can stay all over that, and he was able to. But they didn't have, with the lineup that they had tonight, they didn't really have an ideal guy to go to. They didn't really have outside shooting. They didn't have a post-up guy. I mean, Stevens was kind of working with whatever he had. I don't think it was an ideal play call, but it wasn't a bad play call. And the execution was pretty bad. I wouldn't put the whole thing on just that one play. I mean, they did basically, after Drummond went out of the game with that rolled ankle after he got his 20th rebound, the Pistons dramatically outplayed the Celtics there on out, especially with Caldwell Pope having a huge game. And Reggie Jackson playing well. And Jody Meeks, I thought, was great in the fourth quarter and overtime. He had that one play where he drove so hard. I was so hard you could like feel the ground shaking. He was stomping so hard on that drive. Going coast to coast, I think he was holding off, was it Avery Bradley that he was holding off with one arm? And he was able to get to the rim and score with the tough layup. I mean, he made a huge play there. There was a lot of huge plays from the Pistons. And they played really in the way that the Celtics have been playing lately, where they were the ones really out-hustling, out-executing, making the big plays. It was a great performance by the Pistons towards the end of the game.
So hustling, it was a big part of this game, and Brandon Bass was a big part of that. We praised him a lot, but you spoke to Jay Crowder, we were around Jay Crowder at the very least, and he had some things to say about what was going on in this game, didn't he?
I made no contact with Jay Crowder after the game. Fair However, enough. Thanks to the modern video technology that we possess at CLNS Radio, I was able to hear what he had to say. I was busy talking to Tayshaun Prince, which we can get into in a minute. But actually, a video of Jay Crowder pumping iron on the TV just showed up, and that's probably a perfectly exemplifying what the issue was that they didn't play hard enough in the fourth quarter. They didn't pump iron in the fourth quarter. Jay talked about how this was a must-win for them because this is the kind of game that they're able to pull off. He was asked multiple times about what the impact of Marcus Smart not playing tonight was on the team's game. And he obviously shot that down, saying it was ridiculous and saying that they should have won the game. They had the game. So it didn't really matter the fact that Smart wasn't there. So it was the kind of, you know, fighting words that you want to hear out of somebody like Jay Crowder, who's the kind of fighting word kind of guy on this team. And Jay Crowder had a good game, and he got thrown into the starting lineup, although he's been starting a lot. He had, was it 16, 17 points or so? He was good, and he had a big basket late in the game where he had that drive right down the lane, drew the three-point play, banked it over Andre Drummond. That was a pretty spectacular play from him. And 19 points, thank you. And so he was good, and it's great to see that he continues to play well when he needs to step up. But, you know, obviously when they're missing their two point guards and they got to go to Turner at the point, that's a major weakness for them.
Yeah, Mike and I were a little... Oh, we lost Jared. And you know what? That's my fault. Well,
yeah,
Jared...
went silent for a second.
Yeah, you know what? That was totally on me. I had myself muted and I was talking. There's the slip-up of the night for... from Mr. Matt Rory. Jared is back with us now, though. Jared, I was trying to lead you into the information that, or the discussion that you heard from Tayshaun Prince, and what I was trying to say before I hit my mute button, was that he was a guy that I, as far as I could tell, he was looking to go somewhere else, and he was a little disappointed to have to go back to Detroit by the accounts that I saw. So has he embraced that situation, and what did he have to say after this game tonight?
I don't know if he's embraced it, but he's accepted it. I mean, that happens a lot. Remember how upset Gerald Wallace was to get traded to Boston? And then a couple months later, yeah. Gerald Wallace was the great veteran leader that they needed to teach these young guys. I mean, you know, guys get pissed off when they're in a winning situation and they get dumped out of it. I mean, Tayshaun was on one of the best teams in the league, and they got rid of him so they could bring in basically a younger, more athletic, more offensive-minded version of him. And he's been bouncing around the dregs of the Eastern Conference, and he went from a team that actually is fighting for a playoff spot to a team that is pretty far out from a playoff spot, although tonight might give them a dying prayer, but they're pretty much done down for the count. But he actually talked about how special Boston was and how he was surprised to learn that when he got to Boston that he was embraced and treated so well by all the players and all the coaches. He told me that Gerald Wallace was the only player he actually knew beforehand. He didn't really know any of these guys, but they welcomed him in with open arms, and he was so happy here. So even though this wasn't a situation he wanted to be in, he still greatly enjoyed his time in Boston. And he said that he had a corner three that was kind of the kind of threes that he started hitting when he came to Boston, and he's been hitting for Detroit. And it was a really crucial corner three, and you saw him jawing at someone in the stand. So we thought, oh, there must be some beef going on. Someone's yelling at him, telling him he sucks and all that stuff. He said after the game, it was actually someone cheering for him, and he was like thanking them or something along those lines. So that was pretty cool to see. You don't really see that kind of stuff happen very often, but it was nice. Tayshaun's a really nice guy, really stand up guy. He's been very well liked everywhere he's gone, and it's kind of weird to see that he makes his return to Detroit, where he played most of his career, and he didn't even really want to do it. It's a totally new front office and coaching staff and all that there. So I understand that there's less of a connection there nowadays, but it is weird to think that the guy is going to be playing some of his latter years in the place where it all happened. He probably doesn't really want to be there, but you got to understand, of course, Detroit's in they're at the beginning point of clearing house and transitioning, and he's kind of stuck for that. He probably shouldn't be too happy about it.
Jared, it's Munger here. A guy that we were talking about, a guy who kind of started up the season playing real well, and it looked like, he started to realize potential a little bit, but then he suffered a pretty nasty injury, and he just hasn't come back the way that we expected yet. Kelly Olynyk, he made some really good plays tonight, two good defensive plays. He had 9 rebounds, 5 assists, but there's just something not right with him offensively, and we were discussing the pump fake, which is probably the most frustrating thing that we see out of Kelly Olynyk, because he does it way too much. He just looks like he's very passive, nowhere near as aggressive as he was before the injury. Is there anything about him that's being said? I mean, you know, what any thoughts from him or the staff about Kelly Olynyk or even yourself, just about watching him? Because he's such a gifted offensive player, because he has a guard's mentality from growing up being a guard. He's a very good shooter. Is it just a lack of confidence right now? Is it strictly mental with this guy? Because, there's nothing more frustrating for me than seeing Kelly Olynyk pump fake when no one's within 10 to 15 feet of him and allow the defense to come back and get him and pretty much cost himself a wide-open shot.
Well, he shouldn't play any golf because it looks like he's got the yips. He's shooting like garbage right now. He's shooting 32% or 33% since he came back. It's been, what, about 10 games here now? So it's or 11 games. He's had more than enough time to get his shot going. I know that he had a sprained ankle, so he couldn't shoot for a little while. But he's not a jump shooter. He's a set shooter. So having a sprained ankle, recovering from a sprained ankle, shouldn't really preclude him from having his shooting ability back. So I think he probably got ice cold for a while, and he's had the yips all year. And it's so aggravating to watch. It reminds me of when we were watching Scalabrine, and Scalabrine had the same thing all the time. And you say pump fake. Pump fake is when you deliberately do a deceptive move to try to fake out a defender. When you're wide open by yourself and you pump fake, it's not a pump fake. That's a hesitation.
He's faking himself out.
Exactly. And it's working very well. His pump fakes are very effective in that he's faking himself out. But unfortunately, that's not who he's trying to fake out. So I find watching Kelly Olynyk to be aggravating when he's in this kind of mode. Now, when he's not and he's shooting comfortably, he's a lot of fun to watch because he's so versatile. He's a matchup nightmare for a lot of teams. And I forget who I was talking to about this, but the thing I see with Olynyk and his value is that he's not, I don't think he's that good. And I don't mean that as an indictment on him or anything. It's like his talent, I don't think he's extremely talented. It's just that he's solid in a lot of areas that make his versatility very effective and make it just so difficult for, because it screws up the other team's defensive game plan when they have to deal with the guy that can shoot from out there and then put the ball on the ground when you come charging at him. Because there's a lot of shooting bigs, like Steve Novak's a good example of a shooting big that you can charge as hard as you want at him, because all he's going to do is pump fake and then step to the side. But with Kelly, he can pump fake when you're charging at him and put the ball on the ground, and he can pass it to one of three different options, one down low, one on the elbow, one on the far side corner. I mean, he's the kind of guy that he can make those kind of plays, and right now he's not doing any of it. And until he starts shooting the ball again, you're not going to see any of that kind of stuff. So he did have a really good game against OKC. He had 20 points in 23 minutes, and he hits three balls. He had a good game against Memphis here. He had 15 points, I believe, in 20 minutes. But besides that, every other game has been a bit of a train wreck for him.
All right, Jared, what is on the Garden Report tonight? Because that's the rest of your night, right? Are you excited about this one tonight?
I am mildly excited. I know last one was a lot more exciting because we had Chef Brian Santos from the TD Garden on our last episode, and that was really, really fascinating. A lot of people, that was one of our highest rated shows of the year, I believe. So that was really fun. So you can just watch that episode instead of watching tonight's episode. I mean, tonight we're gonna really break down this game. We're gonna take a look at some of the unique coaching decisions that Brad Stevens made. He went with a really jumbo lineup for a lot of the second half when they really defensively shut down the Pistons. Maybe try to figure out why didn't they go back to that lineup in the fourth quarter, since that was clearly working. And then talking about the Hack-a-Drummond strategy. He's been hacking a lot of guys lately, doing that kind of hack-a-player strategy. So it's interesting to see Stevens go kind of digging into the little playbook of tricks for coaches, and we'll see what we pull out of it.
Yeah, I feel like I like to call it a bit of a college style. I mean, I think he's got that college mentality still, and bringing it to a young team in the NBA, I think, is working out slightly for him, and I don't mind it just yet. So we'll see how it goes, and I'm sure that he's going to adapt with the team as they grow. All right, Jared, people can find your work on youtube.com/CLNSradio. Thank you, sir, for calling in. Nice to hear from you, as always.
Thank you, boys.
All right, there he goes, Jared Weiss. Like I said, youtube.com/CLNSradio. And that's where you'll find the Garden Report. And he's got plenty of great content up there already. And you should subscribe to it. And while you're at it, since you're over using the interwebs, pull out your Android phone or your iPhone or your iPad, your mobile device, and go to your app store and download the CLNS Radio mobile app. It's free. You can listen to all of the podcasts on CLNS Radio, from post-game shows to Beats and Eats, all the way down to the Evening Score, my show, Careless Whispers. Anytime Mike Munger joins a podcast, you can download that and find it and listen to it. So go to clnsradio.com/iOS free for your iPhones and your Apple products, and go to clnsradio.com/Android for all those Android devices. Get the CLNS Radio mobile app, and you can listen to us over and over again, and we'll sing you to sleep or something. All right, Munger, this is usually the time where I preview the next game, but we already did that, so I will just ask you if there's anything else that you'd like to say before we call it a night and call it quits.
Well, you know what, seeing as there wasn't really much for us to talk about during the game, I'm going to go different sport off topic here, but as many of the CLNS family and listeners may or may not know, and if you've seen from the movie, I do have two little boys, both of which have grown up to become quite the athletic pair And today I'm proud to announce that, you know, my younger son not only plays up in division against kids 2 years older than him, plays two divisions up for soccer with three other of his friends that are highly gifted soccer players that get to play up with the third and fourth graders, some fifth graders. Not only did he play up, but he scored the game-winning goal today for his U10 indoor soccer team.
Very nice.
Pretty much no matter what happened in this game, nothing was going to bring me down from that high. The only bad thing about it was I actually had to still stay in the facility and ref three more games after that. I was completely not focused on what I was doing. I couldn't stop thinking about the team win, my son scoring the game-winning goal, and just the eruption of joy and excitement and happiness, not only from him and his teammates, but from us on the sidelines. It was a proud daddy moment, proud coach moment, and regardless of what happened in this game, I was going to be happy anyway. So I figure, any chance to shout out, that. And you know what? You guys will appreciate this. The irony in this other story is also pretty funny. But my older son had an indoor soccer game yesterday, and he's a very physical player. He gets called for a lot of fouls. He actually receives his second red card of the season, ironically for not fouling somebody, but for getting upset at another player for slide tackling his goalie, and he got kicked out for mouthing off to the referee.
Oh.
Go figure. It's unexpected. It is my son that would have something to say to and or about the referee. There's a lot of irony in here. But
maybe you're going to have to teach him to be nicer to referees or else he's going to get kicked out of games. How do you feel about that? Maybe he's, I don't know. Can you do that?
I don't know. It's just, I still think it's funny all the time that I'm a referee for two sports. So, it was a good overall weekend. My one son defended the honor of his teammate and stood up for what was right against the evil tyranny of the indoor soccer referee that didn't know what he was doing. And my younger son scored the game-winning goal for his team today. So, regardless of what happens in today's upsetting Celtics game, it wasn't going to bring me down.
All right. Well, congratulations, sir. And that sounds like a wonderful time for you and your kids there. And hopefully you didn't blow too many calls in those games that you refereed after while enjoying the moment in the next couple of hours there. That's going to do it for us here on CLNS Radio. Thank you for listening to the Celtics post-game show. The Celtics, unfortunately, have lost to the Pistons 105-97. They are now tied with Indiana for eighth place in the Eastern Conference. They play again tomorrow down in Brooklyn, and tomorrow night's hosts are Stahl, Sean Backe, Bobby Krivitsky, and Nick Gelso on social media. Thank you again for listening. Thank you to Jared Weiss for calling in. And Rich Norton, Coach Rich, calling in from checking me out on Twitter. So hit us up next post-game show, Rich, and anybody else that wants to call in, we welcome your calls as always. Munger, man, nice talking to you. It's been a while. I'm glad to hear things are going well. Hopefully the Celtics win tomorrow night, and Sean and Bobby have a nice win to discuss.
Yeah, we got this tomorrow night. No worries.
All right. There you have it. That's the final word here. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good night.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.
Careless Whisper.